Live from the College of Communication, Arts, and Sciences at Michigan State University, it is now time to go beyond the X's and the O's with WKAR's current sports.
You want to go after an athlete, one of my athletes, come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable.
Well, I'm the best corner in the game. When you try me with a star receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're going to get.
Yes, did I express to them I was mad? I was furious. Just furious.
I know my wife will at least shut fake one time.
We're talking about practice, not a game.
And I told our players, you need to be more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Looking in the mirror. Do I look good? I got my extra bands on. I got my other shoes on. Be a dog. We don't need no meows. We don't need no cat.
Here's your host, L. Martin.
What is up, beautiful people? You are now locked into WKAR's current sports. That's right. I am your host, Al Martin. On this Monday, August 28, 2017, really hope you guys are having a great start to your work week. Back at it, back to the grind. Time to get this money, right? We have a great hour of sports talk in store for all of you out there. Well, today's current sports, we will talk about the Detroit Lions and New England Patriots preseason game. Now, that was an interesting game on many fronts, seeing as though the Detroit Lions dug themselves a pretty deep hole. And then as the game went along, they stormed back. Can you draw any conclusions about what the 2017 season for the Detroit Lions will look like based on a preseason game against the defending Super Bowl champions? We will have a few takeaways from that game. Also, it is game week for Michigan State and Bowling Green. That's right. We are now just a week away. Well, under a week away now. Game week for Michigan State football. We'll talk about the Michigan State football team and what to expect from the Spartans in Bowling Green this Saturday. So we'll preview that a bit. Also, the big fight was this weekend. I'm pretty sure many of you tuned into Conor McGregor and Floyd Money Mayweather, the richest fight in combat sporting history. Many people in attendance for that fight. Ratings were absolutely through the roof, and both McGregor and Mayweather made a lot of money, as I just noted. We'll have a few takeaways from that fight as well, and we will invite, live here in Studio S, Ali Easley. Haven't had Ali on the show in quite some time. He is the head boxing trainer at the Crown Boxing Club. Ali will give his thoughts on the fight, and we'll briefly talk about what is the future for Conor McGregor. We all know that Floyd Mayweather has decided to walk away from the sport at a perfect 50-0 record. And we will have weekend winners, that and more. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527 is the number to call. You can also join us via social media at facebook.com/currentsports. Leave us a comment there. I will read it live here on our airwaves and even tweet us at Al Martin WKAR or at WKAR underscore sports. Here are your current sports quick hit headliners. And we start with a brief recap of Friday night high school football action as many of our local teams opened up the season on Friday night instead of Thursday. Lansing Catholic topping Waverly in a pretty lopsided victory, 48-7. East Lansing and St. John's duking it out, East Lansing edging out St. John's in a 21-20 final. Eaton Rapids falling to Jackson Northwest 16-14. Charlotte over Ionia 34-26. Parma Western over Lansing Eastern 61-12. Lansing Sexton beating Gaylord in a shutout 34-0. Stockbridge loses to Grass Lake 41-27. Fulton over Merrill 28-6. Perry over Burton Bentley. I really believe this is the year that the Perry Ramblers make the playoffs. Perry over Burton Bentley 33-14. Fowler over Sterling Heights Parkway Christian 44-12. Weberville losing to Bellevue 40-6. And Portland St. Pat's over Waldron 47-20. The Michigan State football program will hold a walk-on tryout meeting this Wednesday at 4 p.m. in the Pentecost team meeting room inside of the Scandalaris Football Center in order to be eligible for the meeting and subsequent tryout. Michigan State students must be registered in 12 credit hours as a full-time Michigan State student and be in good academic standing, a minimum cumulative grade point average of 2.5. Be declared eligible by the NCAA Clearinghouse. Be prepared to pass tests for any performance-enhancing or street drugs. Pass any background check. Have no classes scheduled that conflict with practice and meeting times after 2 p.m. And it is highly encouraged to have playing experience at the high school varsity level and be able to provide a recommendation from a high school coach in addition to any providing video for evaluation purposes. Good luck to any of those brave souls out there who are looking to walk on the Michigan State football program's roster. All right, on a day celebrating the history of Michigan State men's soccer, the number 22-ranked Spartans proved the future looks pretty bright with a 2-0 win over St. Louis University at Storey Herman Stadium in St. Louis on Sunday. Now, at halftime, the Billikens and the Spartans honored the 50th anniversary of the 1967 co-national championship teams. SLU battled to a 0-0 overtime tie in the national championship game that season. Members for both squads were in attendance at that game. With the win, Michigan State is now 2-0 in the young season, while SLU falls to 0-2 with a pair of losses to ranked teams. The Spartans now return to East Lansing to prepare for the first men's game under the lights at DeMartin Stadium, hosting Dartmouth, on Friday at 6:30 p.m. Michigan State will also host a Labor Day game against Cleveland State on Monday, September 4th at 1 p.m. Michigan State women's soccer picked up their second win of the season against Samford on Sunday at Samford Soccer Complex. The Spartans' first road win was sealed by a goal in the 85th minute from senior forward Jamie Cheslick. MSU improves to 2-2-0, while Samford falls to 0-4-0. MSU heads to Bowling Green, Ohio, for a match with Bowling Green on Friday, kickoff set for 7 p.m. Michigan State women's volleyball claimed its first pre-conference tournament title of the season, capturing the 2017 Hyatt Regency Invitational at Georgia Tech despite a four-set loss in the tournament finale to the host Yellow Jackets. The tournament MVP, Alyssa Garvalink, had 14 kills, 6 blocks, 3 aces, and hit 227 to lead the Spartans, while 3 other seniors had 9 kills each, those being Autumn Bailey, Megan Tompkins, and Holly Tolliver. Tolliver just missed a double-double with 13 digs. MSU will host the Auto Owners Insurance Spartan Invitational this weekend at Jennison Fieldhouse, welcoming San Diego State, Marshall, and Texas A&M Corpus Christi to East Lansing. The Detroit Tigers lose 2 of 3 to the Chicago White Sox over the weekend. Lucas Giolito twirled 7 shutout innings for his first career win and was aided by a 7-run outburst in the third as the White Sox knocked off the Tigers 7-1 on Sunday at Guaranteed Rate Field to win their second consecutive series and complete a winning homestand. Now, Tigers left-hander Matt Boyd ran into trouble in the form of a 5-run third. Boyd allowed an RBI double to Tim Anderson, followed by a Tyler Saladino RBI single before Matt Davison launched a 3-run homer to complete the White Sox damage. Detroit begins its final interleague series of the season tonight with an 8:40 p.m. game against the Rockies out in Denver. Jordan Zimmermann takes a 6-0 career record against Colorado from his Nationals days into the start. And Victor Martinez was diagnosed with atrial fibrillation during Saturday night's game against the Chicago White Sox for the second time this season and stayed overnight in the hospital undergoing testing. He was placed on the 10-day DL and was expected to be released from the hospital on Sunday. Atrial fibrillation is an irregulation of the heart, often a rapid heart rate that can increase a person's risk of stroke, heart failure, and other heart-related complications. Pretty scary stuff. Martinez experienced the symptoms after his final at-bat of the game. He went 0-for-4 with a strikeout and a walk. The Detroit Lions have cut wide receiver Keyshawn Martin and tight end Tim Wright. The Lions made those moves today, giving the two veterans an opportunity to possibly join another NFL team before rosters are set for week one. Martin, a Michigan native who played right here at Michigan State, has 62 receptions for 685 yards and 5 TDs in his 5-year career. Detroit signed Wright 3 weeks ago, giving the team depth at the position while Eric Ebron recovers from a hamstring injury. Now, Wright has 89 career receptions for 907 yards and 2 TDs over 3 seasons with the Lions, New England, and Tampa Bay. And last but certainly not least, Conor McGregor is a showman, a tough customer, and a brilliant mixed martial artist. On Saturday night out in Las Vegas, he showed he could box a little bit as well, but not nearly well enough to beat Floyd Mayweather, one of the all-time greats of the game. Mayweather, out of retirement at the age of 40, won the fight on a 10th round TKO to take his record to 50-0. McGregor, a 4-1 underdog with bookies, but 100-1 with many boxing experts, proved he wasn't hopelessly overmatched in a sport he had never before competed in professionally. We'll have more from the Conor McGregor and Floyd Mayweather Saturday night showdown as we invite Ali Easley live here to Studio West. He is the head trainer at Lansing's own Crown Boxing Club. That and more, here we go.
Helps. I mean, obviously you feel a lot better after a win than you do a loss, but I think the biggest thing we're going to get from this is learn from the mistakes we made. We made a lot of mistakes tonight, and that's where your improvement will come, you know, learning from those mistakes. So we'll spend a lot of time on film. The hard thing now is it's a 3-day week. We got a game next Thursday, so it shortens everything up, so that makes it a little bit tougher. You gotta get a lot done in really 2 days. You always say the first week that you make your best improvement from first to second week. I hope that's true. We got to play Everett next week.
There was a pretty scary moment, though, in the third quarter as Michael Lynn III, quarterback and lone returning starter for the Cougars, had to be helped off the field. But turns out it was just cramps.
Yeah. I was surprised that we had so many cramps. This is the coolest opening night I can remember in all the years I've been coaching. Usually it's like 85-90% humidity. Tonight was a beautiful night. We're all cramping up, so that's scary too, I guess. Anytime a kid goes down, you worry. But that when it was cramps, and I could just razz him about it. So it's okay.
And that is how we start this Monday afternoon edition of WKAR's Current Sports. Much love to all of our listeners out there who tune in each and every weekday afternoon. And if you are a first-time listener, thanks so much. This is the most entertaining hour of your day. Thank you for tuning in. We've got a great hour of sports talk for all of you out there. And I first just want to acknowledge Friday Night Football. It was a great opening week of local high school football here in the Mid-Michigan area. On Thursday night, we covered the Ithaca and Clare game. And you can watch that report as well as our second game from Friday night, which was the Lansing Catholic and Waverly game. You can catch both of those reports right now via our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports as we put together two-minute drill reports. And what you just heard was some of our post-game coverage from the Lansing Catholic game. That was the voice of longtime head coach Jim Ahern of the Cougars. He coached at Ithaca for just numerous years, I should say, and then has been coaching at Lansing Catholic since 2009. The Cougars have a competitive team each and every season, and they opened up the year much as many expected over a Waverly team that really has some progress to make, to say the least. It was a 48-7 final on Friday night as the Cougars topped the Lansing Waverly Warriors. And you look at Waverly's defense, that was what really stood out to me. I mean, this is a Waverly defense that actually gave up 358 points last year. That's a lot of points. There's a ton of turnover, not just for Waverly, but for Lansing Catholic as well. I mentioned there was a scary moment with Michael Lynn III, who went down in the second half, really couldn't see what had exactly happened, and then he limped to the sideline, and then he goes onto the stretcher table, and the training staff is just trying to massage out a cramp. And it's so crazy because that probably, just like Jim said, that probably was the coldest opening week of high school football that I've ever covered. Really, I mean, I'm used to, you know, that opening week it being about 80 degrees outside, sun is shining, T-shirt and shorts. That's not what happened on Thursday and Friday night. It was about in the 60s. I think it even got as low as 50, low 50s. I mean, it felt like football weather. It felt like fall football weather, I must admit. But for this to be August and it to be that kind of cold, that was a bit weird. But there were multiple players that did cramp up for Lansing Catholic. Nonetheless, though, Michael Lynn III, I mean, thank goodness, because he is, for the Cougars, the lone returning offensive starter for the Lansing Catholic Cougars. So, thank goodness it was just cramps. Because, again, as we explained last week with Zach Berridge on the show of WILX TV 10, who does a great job on the Sports Blitz, along with Phil Byrne covering high school sports in general, as Zach and I joked on last week's show, heck, I mean, if you only have one returning offensive starter, you want that to be your quarterback, right? The most important position on a football field. So Michael Lynn III, he's poised to have a big year. Thank goodness it was just cramps, because I hate seeing injuries in just week one, no matter what the sport. He's fine knowing Lansing Catholic starts the year 1-0. Again, to kind of go through the local scores from Friday night one more time, how about East Lansing over St. John's by 1 point, 21-20 there. You had Jackson Northwest over Eden Rapids, Charlotte over Ionia, Parma Western just laying the smackdown on Lansing Eastern. And, you know, this Lansing Eastern team has been a squad that has struggled for quite some time now. Every year, Lansing Eastern has been on the struggle bus. I'm hoping that they can at least give me 3 wins. Just give me 3 wins out there, Lansing Eastern. Come on, Quakers. I'm really rooting for, again, you're not supposed to root as a reporter, right? But I'm rooting for Lansing Eastern. Sexton over Gaylord, a shutout win there, 34-0. Grass Lake over Stockbridge, Fulton over Merrill. Perry, the Perry Ramblers, this is the year, I believe, that they finally make the playoffs. Perry over Burton Bentley, 33-14. Fowler over Sterling Heights Parkway Christian. You had Weberville losing to Bellevue, and then Portland St. Pat's over Waldron in eight-man football. All right, I want to make that transition and just briefly talk about the Detroit Lions and the New England Patriots over the weekend, because this was a game that took place on Friday evening. And as I was out covering the Lansing Waverly and Lansing Catholic game, I was getting updates on my phone, and I must say I was very surprised at what what happened early on in this game? Because, you know, it's preseason football, so I don't want to come to these hardcore predictions on the year just based on a preseason game. But, you know, when you really look at things and how things panned out at the very beginning of that game where both teams have their first stringers out in the football field, it has to, as a Detroit Lions fan, rub you the wrong way. I mean, the Patriots got up 24-0 in the first quarter alone. The Detroit Lions had 7 penalties in that span of time. I counted 3 on special teams and 3 on the secondary when I got home. I DVR'd the game when I got home and was kind of, you know, putting together my prep notes for this conversation. But 3 on special teams, 3 on the secondary. Tom Brady completed 12 of his first 13 passes, and the one that he didn't was just a clear drop. He should have been 13-13 to start the game. Tom Brady, the GOAT, this is what he does. The Detroit Lions had no sacks against the Patriots. They had 3 hits on Patriots quarterbacks in total. There is going to be no pass rush, I believe, for this upcoming year for the Detroit Lions. Now, don't get me wrong, Ziggy Ansah, we have not seen him, lace up the cleats for a preseason game thus far. They want to save him, I believe, and get him ready for week 1. But you have Kerry Hyder out for the season. It's going to be the struggle bus when it comes to the Lions working on a pass rush. Right now, they don't have one. Brady had all of the time in the world to throw the football. And you just look at what happened and said, okay, you know, there's levels in the NFL clearly here, because you look at the Patriots, a Super Bowl contending team, and that has been for a while, and you compare that to the first string of the Detroit Lions, and you just see glaring holes. Again, it's preseason, but still, there are glaring needs for this Detroit Lions team that is going to really pose a lot of problems as the season rolls along, I believe, especially the secondary as well. So you have no pass rush on defense. The secondary is just non-existent. The linebacker core, question mark. We saw linebacker Tahir Whitehead also go out in the second quarter in what was described as a knee injury. Head coach Jim Caldwell, he assured yesterday that Whitehead will be okay. But, I mean, we're talking about Tahir Whitehead here. Whitehead had surgery over in the offseason on his knee. So you already have a linebacker core. You already have a secondary that is suspect. And then you add in a possible starter, and Tahir Whitehead getting injured in a preseason game. I'm just not confident when looking at that Detroit Lions defense. Gerard Davis, he is the Detroit Lions highly touted rookie. You know, Davis admitted, because Davis didn't have a good game, he admitted in the locker room that the Lions struggles throughout that game had to do with miscommunication and just things that he has not seen before. I mean, this is a rookie on the Lions defense, again, who is poised to have a solid year in the eyes of many. But when you're going against the defending Super Bowl champs, and they're throwing a lot of things at you that you've never seen before, and you start to see why the Patriots are so good at what they do. There was a lot of confusion from many players, including Gerard Davis, which he admitted he made a lot of rookie mistakes on Friday night. So this is the difference. Again, it's preseason, but this is the difference, a clear difference. We're just looking at the first quarter of that game. There's a difference between a Super Bowl contending team and an 8-9 win team. You saw that on Friday night, all right? And, gosh, I tell you what, guys, to start the year, you saw how the Patriots manhandled the Lions in the first quarter of that game. But if this is an accurate measuring stick of how the Lions start the season, it's going to be rough, because they will play 3 solid teams to start the NFL year. I believe the Lions are going to start this year off a bit rocky. They will have to open the year at home against the Arizona Cardinals, and then they will head on the road to play the New York Football Giants, and then they play at Ford Field the Atlanta Falcons. It's going to be tough. It really is going to be tough to have a lights-out start to the year for the Detroit Lions. But I also want to acknowledge this as well. Preseason football. You guys know how much I despise NFL preseason football. 4 preseason games for every team in the National Football League is far too much. And when you play that many games in a gladiator sport like football, injuries are bound to happen. And my stomach completely turned as I saw Julian Edelman go out of that preseason game against the lowly Detroit Lions. Julian Edelman out for the season due to a torn ACL. This is Tom Brady's favorite target. And just to kind of put in perspective the kind of impact that this loss will have for the New England Patriots, since 2009, which was Edelman's first year with the Pats, New England is 84-19. 84-19 when Edelman plays in a game for the Pats. In games he is not suited and booted, the Patriots are 15-10. 84-19 when Julian Edelman plays, 15-10 when he doesn't. When he plays, that's an 81 win percentage. 15-10, 60%. So you're talking about a 20% win percentage gap. I couldn't believe that when I saw that. And I saw Tom Brady put on his social media account, it was a picture of Julian Edelman who made that ridiculous catch in last year's Super Bowl win. I saw Tom Brady tweet put on his Instagram a photo of himself along with Julian, and he called Julian a warrior. That is going to be tough. It really is. But if any team can recover from a loss like that, it is going to be Bill Belichick and the New England Patriots. Filling voids is what they do. For the Lions, I'm just going to let my prediction, you know, I'm going to put it out there right now. For the Lions, I see 9-7 for the Lions. I really do. I think this will be a team, you know, and I want to give a big shout out as well to Jack Ebling, who actually had me on his press pass television show via Fox 47 last night. You know, we talked about the Detroit Lions, and that was my debut on the show, and we kind of dove into the Julian Edelman injury, you know, the Lions digging themselves a deep 24-0 hole and then storming back. What does that say about the team? And, you know, they asked me for my prediction, and I let the cat out the bag last night, so I guess I can let the cat out the bag here on my own show, right? I see a 9-7 year for the Lions. I think when you look at the schedule, I believe, again, I talked about the start. You play the Cardinals, you play the Giants, you play the Falcons. I think the Lions will lose two of those first three games. The seven losses, I mapped them out. I see them losing in week 2 and 3 against the Giants and Falcons. Heck, even I have them losing week 4 as well against the Vikings. I don't think they'll beat the Vikings. Then I think they'll go on a bit of a winning stretch. In week 9, they will lose at Green Bay against the Packers. Week 13 at Baltimore against the Ravens. Week 14 at Tampa Bay against the Buccaneers. And then week 17 at home against Green Bay. So I see a 9-7 year. Jim Caldwell trying to take the Detroit Lions back to the playoffs for the third time in 4 years, which is pretty admirable considering that this is the Honolulu Blue. This is the lowly Detroit Lions franchise that constantly breaks the hearts of its fans every single year. But if Jim Caldwell can pull this off and sneak the Detroit Lions into the playoffs for back-to-back years, it will be, as many diehard Lions fans know, it will be the first time that the Lions have made the postseason in back-to-back years since 1994-1995. I don't even know if I knew my ABCs. Yeah, it's been a long time. A long time, folks. So we'll see what happens. But again, there's levels to it. I mean, when you just look at what happened in the first quarter of that game, I said to myself, yep, that is the Super Bowl difference right there. Right now, you can clearly see this is a good litmus test to show everybody how far the Lions are from legitimately competing for a championship. It's preseason, I know. But if there's any preseason game that can tell you about a team, it's going against the New England Patriots. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527 is the number to call if you want to weigh in on today's show. You can also join us via social media at facebook.com/currentsports. Leave us a comment there. I will read it live here on our airwaves. Also, you can join us via Twitter at Al Martin WKAR or at WKAR underscore sports. I'm seeing a few comments here and a question coming from Victor Robinson, one of our dear listeners, my fraternity brother as well. Vic wants to know, when is the Michigan State depth chart coming out? Well, Vic, they actually released that on Media Day for the Michigan State football team. I can probably have Isaac post that to our Facebook page later on today, but the depth chart is out. We also got another copy of it last week. A quick MSU football update. It is game week for Michigan State football. Again, the Spartans will welcome Bowling Green to Spartan Stadium this Saturday at noon. Mark D'Antonio will have the first game press conference tomorrow morning at 11:30. We will be in the house for that press conference, and we will bring you coverage of that press conference on tomorrow's Current Sports. Let's hit our first break. When we come back, we will welcome live in Studio S, Ali Easley, head trainer at Crown Boxing Club. Ali will share his thoughts on the Conor McGregor and Floyd Money Mayweather bout that took place on Saturday night. That and more. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Finished up segment A by addressing the Detroit Lions and New England Patriots preseason matchup on Friday evening. Also briefly highlighted week one of high school football action here in mid-Michigan. As Isaac Constance, engineer of WKAR's Current Sports, and myself, we covered the Lansing Catholic and Lansing Waverly game. And in just a moment, we're going to invite to the show live here in Studio S, Ali Easley, head boxing trainer at the Crown Boxing Club. Before we do that, Isaac, we haven't heard from you all show, man. How you doing, dude? You looking like Eminem with the new haircut. I like it.
I know it.
Looking fly.
You do like it? I've got to ask.
I do.
Be honest.
I do. It's a clean look, man. It's like a clean corporate look for you. And, I'm used to the hair being kind of shaggy. That's your personality, though. But I like it. It's clean cut. But you can't go wrong with being clean cut.
No, that's the thing. It is a little bit more of a slim, shady look than I'm accustomed to, of course.
You look like Eminem. I must say that.
Now that I've got it so short, I'm tempted to do what, a lot of the athletes do nowadays, get a line shaved into one part
Stop.
Of it.
That's
Come on.
Way too far. Okay, pump the brakes right there. That is going way. There's a fine line, brother. And that's the line. That's the line, literally. Don't draw a line in your head.
Kidding.
Okay?
I'm just kidding. I'm not drawing a line in my head, but it did cross my mind. it did.
Well, good to see you, man. I know we have a caller on line one before we get to Ali Easley. We have Dave from Wyoming on line one. Dave, what's up?
Well, I'm still all over the map here, but first, I think the Tigers might solve some of their payroll, unfortunately, with an insurance policy if Victor Martinez's heart issues don't improve.
Yeah.
They're on the hook for $18 million for next year.
Yes, he is.
And Lloyds of London could take that one off the books, and, that would help them. It's a sad way to go out. Secondly, about the, I think the Lions' best shot is to have engineer no quick score drives for the whole year. The best defense is going to be long drives for the Detroit offense because defense just isn't very good. I don't think they're going to be able to stop too many folks. You're a little bit more optimistic than I am. I have the reverse. I see them as 7-9 with some some typical Lion losses of games they probably shouldn't lose, but they figure out a way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, that's just from watching them too many years. I'm not going to cry for New England because you still got Amendola and Hogan and a number of other people that, you know, Brady will just do receiver by committee. Mm-hmm. A little bit more. Amendola is still pretty solid. He's not Edelman, but if he can stay concussion free, I think he could be the next guy there. And if you'll allow me to segue into the next thing about the fight.
Yeah, did you check it out? I'm curious. Did you watch it, Dave?
Yes, I did.
You did? Okay.
A couple things that made me sort of sit back and wonder, but I've watched Floyd Mayweather. I'll age myself. I watched Floyd Mayweather. I watched his father box against Sugar Ray Leonard.
Mm-hmm.
Saw that fight. But I was seeing Floyd fight when he was in high school at the Grand Rapids Golden Gloves. And he's always been a technician, a defensive fighter. I really think that in the first couple rounds, yeah, he did take some shots that we normally wouldn't see him take. One, he's 40 years old and doesn't block them. But I also think that he took some of those shots because it didn't take him very long to figure out that you can talk with your guests about it. I made the mistake of getting roped into doing some boxing while I was in the military. And if you box against guys who are trained in it, like the Golden Gloves and stuff,
mm-hmm.
when they hit you, it hurts. A body shot goes to the right places, hits floating ribs, hits the liver, it's the kidney areas. It's like hitting a side of beef with a baseball bat. I don't think Conor McGregor has ever been hit as hard as he expected to be. You know, he was surprised how hard Floyd could hit him and how accurately Floyd could hit him. And I think Floyd also realized that Conor McGregor just did not have power punches compared to all the good boxers that Floyd fought over these. You know,
Conor McGregor
was probably a guy like he was really an amateur as far as power punching goes. And he would have had to telegraph that left so long that, you know, Floyd could have run across the ring by the time it started. So I wasn't surprised by the way it ended. And as far as McGregor saying, oh, no, we can't do it, they should have allowed it. Nevada Boxing Commission was getting all kinds of heat for even allowing this. If they'd have let... I don't think McGregor even attempted a punch in that 10th round. If they'd have let Mayweather continue to hit him in the head until he went down, and they had another Kim Dooku on their hands years ago, where the guy wouldn't go down,
right,
ended up
right.
dying in a hospital.
So you believe that they stopped it, and Dave, thanks for the call. You think they stopped it right where it needed to be stopped. I thought it was a little too early, but I wanted to see McGregor go down. I mean, if you're going to go down, go down.
Well,
you know what I mean? I hear where you're going.
I remember the Kim Dooku fight.
Yeah.
And that guy was a warrior. He was, and Mancini was hitting him, and Mancini was getting hit too, but Mancini came on with an onslaught, and the guy wouldn't go down. And we have a different attitude about concussions and brain injuries than we did 15, 20 years ago, too, which I think is the other reason for the quick whistle. I'll get back to your guest. Thanks a lot for your time.
Thank you, Dave. Always great insight. So let's dive right into a great segue to our guest for today's Current Sports. Haven't seen him in a while. Always good seeing his face. Ali Easley's in his house live here in Studio S, head boxing trainer at Crown Boxing Club. Ali, first off, man, good seeing you. How you doing?
I'm doing great, Al. Always good to see you, too.
For sure. So we were chatting before we got on the air here in segment B. You did not watch the fight. First off, Ali, why?
Well, probably because of Miss Nellie, our two-year-old we have at home. You know?
Okay, for family reasons, right?
It's a little past my bedtime. You know, these days, fatherhood, you try to go to bed a little earlier. So.
Right.
But, you know, I didn't really, be honest, I didn't have much of an interest in seeing it. That's one. I thought it was a little circusy, you know, not like your typical build-up to maybe a heavyweight championship fight.
Mm-hmm. You know? When you saw the result, I'm pretty sure you've seen highlights by now, right?
Yes.
And looking at the result of it, Floyd Mayweather, who hasn't knocked anybody out since like 1938, right? He knocks out Conor McGregor. McGregor's first ever professional boxing bout against arguably the best pound-for-pound boxer in the last 10 to 15 years. What do you expect, right?
when you look at how far this fight went, a lot of people didn't even predict it would go to 10. I was thinking inside of 4 rounds. Were you surprised at how long Conor McGregor lasted?
Well, you know, I get asked a lot of my opinion. What do you think of this fight? What do you think of this upcoming fight? And you know, usually there's not a lot that I can say. You never really know. But this fight, there's been a few over the years I felt pretty confident in. Tyson McFeely, I felt pretty confident. You know, Gotti Leha, I felt pretty confident. I knew the outcome of those. And I think this was kind of in that same ballpark as the Tyson McFeely. I felt, and I think anybody that's in the boxing industry did, that McGregor was just going to go absolutely bananas as long as he could and then, you know, get knocked out. I mean, unless he somehow landed a crazy punch. So
right.
I think it was just a matter of time. I was thinking in my head probably about 7 rounds, maybe.
Okay.
7-8 rounds. So,
and anything past that, the thing about Conor McGregor that I made the point of, what, you know, when talking with Isaac about it is, you know, McGregor is not used to boxing conditioning. I mean, this guy is a UFC fighter. No knock to UFC and mixed martial artists out there, but I mean, we're talking about what, 3 rounds, 5? Is it 5 minutes each round, Isaac? 3
yeah,
rounds,
it's
5 minutes
in UFC, 3 in boxing, of course.
Well, no, 12 in boxing.
12 rounds, yeah.
12 rounds, 3 minutes each round. That's a lot of fatigue.
Yeah, man. It's an 11-minute difference.
It takes a lot of endurance. Yeah, that takes a lot of endurance to go that long as Conor McGregor did. I mean, he's not used to that. But just the spectacle that it was, Ali, were you surprised that this fight even came to fruition?
Well, on one hand, I was a little surprised. But then again, I mean, from what I was understanding, I think that McGregor was, in a lot of respects, regarded as the Floyd Mayweather of, you know, martial arts. So in that respect, you had two of the, you know, top-tier gentlemen that were going to compete. So I don't think it was out of character that the fight materialized. I think McGregor had some prior boxing experience before getting into the martial arts. I mean, martial arts, that sort of MMA industry is somewhat new, and I believe any of the athletes that are probably, you know, maybe 30 or older had to start somewhere, and they obviously didn't start with martial arts. They started with boxing or wrestling or something of that nature.
Right.
And the fact that he was kind of probably the equivalent to Mayweather in his industry, I guess I'm not too shocked that it came together.
And yeah. Especially the money, right?
Well, the money makes it happen. I mean,
that makes the world go around, right? Get this. This is a crazy stat here, Ali. Floyd made $178,000 per second in this fight. In total, it looks as though, in combination with you know, the purse for the fight, along with the pay-per-views, Floyd will make around $300 million total, which is more than any athlete has made throughout their entire career. Unbelievable stuff. Conor McGregor had a guaranteed purse of $30 million, more than all of his MMA prizes combined. Combine that with the pay-per-view numbers, his final purse will come around $100 million. I mean, that is a lot of moolah on the line. Going back to what Dave said, though, as far as the technicalities of the fight, we did see Floyd Mayweather take some shots that he really has not taken in a long, long time. I saw a stat via ESPN that said that Conor McGregor landed 111 punches. That's more than Manny Pacquiao was able to land on Floyd Mayweather in their bout a few years back. Is that surprising to you? Why did Floyd take the shots that he took in this fight?
Well, I think his common perception was that, you know, McGregor was going to go all out. And so I think he was prepared and probably had that defensive mindset, you know, to take some, absorb some of that and kind of figure the guy out. You know, when you box someone that's kind of reckless like that, you do have to be a little defensive minded. You can't be so offense in your game, because then you're obviously open to risk. The best time to punch somebody is when they're trying to punch you. Those are when your openings are. So I'm really not surprised at all. And I would be shocked if anybody said they were from the boxing industry that, you know, he fought that type of fight.
Right.
I think I heard that he didn't even throw a punch till maybe 2 minutes into the fight. I'm
exactly.
Not surprised.
Yeah.
That doesn't surprise me one bit.
As far as Conor McGregor goes, this is his first professional boxing match, period. Do you see a career possibly in the sport of boxing for Conor McGregor, or do you think he'll just kind of stay in his lane in UFC?
Well, you know, I don't know what the UFC purses are. I certainly don't, but I think he put himself in a very favorable position to fight, you know, maybe the winner of the Pacquiao fight. It was Pacquiao Horn, I think, maybe.
Yeah, right.
You know, something like that, and I think he'd have a legitimate chance. I mean, the guy's, you know, a tough guy, and I think he has the experience and the age from his martial arts experience that he could be in the ring with some of those guys. I think, I don't know what the paydays are in the mixed martial arts industry, but I think if he were to have an opportunity again for a purse similar against somebody, a name like Pacquiao or whomever, that he should take it. I would.
I would too, man. Dollar bill, y'all. Ali Easily, boxing head trainer at the Crown Boxing Club. And Ali, before I get you out of here, I want to talk about the future of boxing itself, because it's amazing to me where the sport is right now. You see a fight like this, you see all of the attention that it garnered over the weekend. I'm looking in the crowd and I'm seeing LeBron James sitting front row, Steve Harvey, Draymond Green, Bruce Willis. I mean, I could go on and on and on with the celebrities that were in attendance. And you combine that with the moolah that I mentioned and how many people watched the fight over the weekend. However, you compare that to the rest of the fighting world, right? Terrence Crawford, who I absolutely love. I love, he's so entertaining as a boxer, and I really believe that he's one of the household names in the game. Miguel Cotto, who actually fought on the same night as this fight between Floyd and Conor. A lot of people didn't even know about it. You have Triple G, Canelo Alvarez. Those are names that don't garner the attention of a Floyd Money Mayweather. Where is boxing headed popularity-wise right now, Ali?
Well, you know, a lot of people have always said so goes the sport of boxing. And until we have that, you know, Tyson, Lennox Lewis kind of fighter again in the heavyweight division, I think you're going to be enamored by some of these guys like Triple G and guys that are coming up that are sort of taking a spotlight. Mayweather was able to capture the popularity, you know, starting back when he was, I think, 16-year-old kid in the Olympics. And he's really held that. I'm not sure how or...
Yeah, I was about to ask you, does that make it even more remarkable? Because Floyd is a boring fighter, Ali. I mean, unless you really, really appreciate the sweet science that is boxing. I mean, he'll go down as the greatest defensive boxer of all time, but his fights are, for the most part, a snooze fest. However, people tune in left and right. Does that make it... And he's not a heavyweight. Does that make it even more amazing when you look at his career?
I really think it says something for the guy because, I mean, he just follows that standard KISS, right? Keep it simple, stupid. I mean, he is so simple and basic in his execution, and it's he doesn't take many chances, and he's able to be very successful in doing so. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it's his outside-of-the-ring persona or – who he surrounds himself with in the music industry. I don't know what ever led to him capturing the audience the way that he has.
Right.
But I find it hard to believe that some of these other guys, like you mentioned, Alvarez or Gennady Golovkin, are being able to really do that.
Right.
I think if you had a heavyweight, I think then it would be a different story.
Right.
People seem to be more mesmerized by that division. I don't know that we'll ever see another division in boxing, you know, the different weight classes that Floyd has represented over his career ever be as popular as when he had those.
Without a doubt. And I think you just hit the nail on the head there. I think it's personality, if anything. I mean, the trash talking, the, you know, the showing off the money in the cars, you know, he turned himself in many ways into a villain. It's either like you love Floyd Mayweather or you hate Floyd Mayweather. And people are intrigued by that dynamic.
Sure.
Ali, before we get you out of here, man, school is about to start on Wednesday. I know you're revving up for that, and you're so busy as a father. You're always, I assume you're still doing the Help a Willing Kid Foundation, the Hawk Foundation as well. You're teaching classes at Michigan State. What are you up to right now, man?
Oh, life is just so busy. You know, our son is in Texas in the military. He's about to deploy overseas, so that's nerve-wracking.
Wow. What part of Texas?
He's at Fort Bliss.
Is that anywhere near Houston?
No, it's farther west.
Farther west, okay. And thoughts and prayers out to everybody. All the images I've seen online, Isaac, of everything that's happening in Houston. Really, so that's good that he's safe right now. That's great. So your son's out there. What else?
Son's out there. Our daughter turns 2 next month, so she's about to hit that terrible stage.
The terrible twos, right?
Yeah, and my wife and I are just busy with the foundation and work and just a lot going on, but that's life, you know. It's either get busy living or get busy dying, I guess.
Well, I tell you what, you're living it up, my man, and you're doing some great things in the community. We got to have you on soon. How's that sound?
Anytime, my friend.
My man, Ali Easley, head boxing trainer at Crown Boxing Club. Let's hit our final break. When we come back, we'll have weekend winners for you, and I'll briefly dive into Michigan football as the Wolverines also get the year underway with a trip down to Texas at AT&T Stadium, taking on the Florida Gators. That and more. Do not touch that dial. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. We just finished up a chat with Ali Easley, dear friend of the show. He is the head boxing trainer at Crown Boxing Club. As we just dove into the result of the Conor McGregor and Floyd Mayweather fight, it was a 10th round TKO in favor of Floyd Mayweather, who now ends his career with an unblemished 50-0. Pretty impressive stuff, I must say. And you know what? People were kind of going off on me on social media. Isaac, did you see what I did over the weekend?
Besides predicting McGregor to win?
Well, no, that's what I did on social media. Yeah. Because you knew that I made that prediction on Friday. We kind of had some fun with it. And I said, just for fun, right?
Yeah.
So just for fun, I got so annoyed, I must say. I was driving to Detroit, and I was on social media, and all I saw was all of this Floyd Mayweather love. You know I'm not the biggest Floyd Mayweather fan. The dude is ridiculously cocky. He especially, this is why I really am not a big Floyd guy. You know, what he has done throughout his career in relation to members of the opposite sex.
Yes.
That has really irked me and has really angered me as to how many people have embraced him and kind of pushed that to the side. I won't go down that rabbit hole right now with just 5 minutes left in the show. So you know what? I got so tired of it. You said, you know what? Just for fun, let me just put this as my status. And I just kind of put out there, Conor McGregor shocks the world. Well, I should say, Conor McGregor will win this fight and shock the world. That's all I said. And people lost their minds. I had people texting me, frat brothers texting me, Al, you will eat, I quote, Al, you will eat crow on Monday. I'm
what?
Calling in. And I'm putting you in your place. Floyd all day, the money team, TBE, 50-0. That's all. You should look at my social media. It is crazy, dude. I'm like, dude, it's social. I went on Fox's press pass last night. I'm like, dude, it was fake news, all right?
Yeah.
I just put it out there to have some fun. And people take social media way out of context sometimes. Relax, right? So,
the other part of this, too.
Yeah. Am I do I look that stupid?
No. I knew where you were going. But, no. Yeah, I could have had some more fun with that than I did and probably should have. Dang it. But,
yeah, missed it.
In any case. No, but watching that fight, yeah, it was obvious from the very start. And I was watching at this big viewing party, had all of these guys behind me. Go McGregor, let's go, you know, all of that stuff. And through the first 3 rounds, they're like, this isn't even close. He's so much better. And I just said, y'all, be patient. It's part of a plan. This is a boxer.
Right.
The greatest defensive boxer of all time. He knows what he's doing. Sure enough, like you and I said, it came down to stamina and simple boxing technique. And that's why Mayweather won this fight so dominantly, and or at least why I saw as a dominant performance. I was impressed by McGregor.
McGregor was
don't
impressive.
Get me wrong.
Dude,
he was.
Like the first 4 rounds, I'm sitting there saying, man, you could give those
that's
to Conor.
Thing.
You could give those to Conor.
Exactly. And people were sleeping on the 4th round.
Yeah.
I thought Conor had a good 4th round.
He had a great 4th round. I thought, and me and my brother were sitting there, I'm like, I would give the first 4 to Conor. I mean, but you could tell Floyd was messing around.
Yeah.
Floyd was smiling. You knew it was he was going to turn it up later
Rope-a-dope.
On. Yeah, oh, for sure. You know, right now, what I want to do, we have 3 minutes left in the show here. I want to invite the man behind the glass who's also next to you, Isaac, right now. He's one of our dear callers. He calls in just about every day. We absolutely love him. And to show you how big of a fan of the show he is, he just happened to be in the area and decided to come by the studio and just see if I was in and see if he could meet me. And I'm like, oh, my goodness, man. It's so good to meet you. Mike from Saginaw is here. Those who are longtime listeners know Mike from Saginaw. You hear his voice just about every other day. I want to just give Mike a shout out. I want to say thank you for your support. Thank you for coming in today. It's an honor to meet you, my man. Anything you would like to weigh in that you haven't gotten the chance as you normally would by calling in from what you've heard throughout this hour, Mike?
I just like to hear your opinion on the Video Music Awards from last night.
I knew he was going there. I watched the performances last night after Game of Thrones. Kendrick Lamar was amazing. Logic, man, I'm such a big fan of his. I must say, Logic's Everybody has been my second favorite album of 2017 next to Kendrick Lamar's latest album. Logic was amazing. Everybody got emotional during his performance. I won't blow what he did, but it was amazing. It really speaks to him, his character, as well as an artist. He was great last night. I really liked him. Cardi B has blown up. She performed last night. That was fun to watch. It was just a real cool spectacle, I must say. I liked it a lot. But Kendrick Lamar, I mean, he had a guy on fire on stage. I mean, he lit a guy on fire. I mean, it was amazing. It was amazing. So you watched it, right, Mike?
Yes, I did.
What was your favorite? Real quick, we only got a minute. What was your favorite performance? Favorite moment? Anything?
Kendrick Lamar.
He takes the show every time, man. And he swept just about every award he was nominated for. He won Video of the Year, Rap Album of the Year, Rap Artist of the Year. Kendrick Lamar, the GOAT. I'm telling you, the greatest. And you, Isaac, you cracked the code, man. You told me about his latest album, how it's meant to be played backwards, and he confirmed that not too long ago. He's the GOAT.
I was cheesing from ear to ear. I could not believe it. I just felt so good having made that discovery. Biggest accomplishment of my life.
Yes, right? Exactly. All right, folks, we'll be back at it same time, same place tomorrow, right here on WKAR AM 870, 94.5 FM. Mark D'Antonio will talk to the press at 11:30 in the morning. We'll have coverage getting you ready for the start of Michigan State football. Be easy, people.